Hey, you're listening to Blindsight. Let's go. Mental health isn't something to take lightly. It's time to fight. It's time to thrive. Let's do this.
Welcome to Blindsight. This is Bill Lundgren, your host. I'm glad to have you on board. You know that this is another episode of working on the steps, which are associated with AA, but really have so many more ramifications to just plain life. And I'm real pleased to have back on for this episode, Darren
Zenger.
Zenger. I can't understand why I have trouble. I can say it when I'm not on the air, but okay. I'm sorry, Darren. It's good to have you with us. And today we'll be talking about step three. And those of you who might have missed the previous episode, go to our archive sometime after this presentation and listen to that because they're tied in together. Step two is when you're thinking or accepting that you need to make some changes, and this is taking the action. And Darren, can you tell us what that third step is?
Third step is turning our will over to God or a higher power as we understand it. And it's, you know, some people struggle with surrender, but I like to coin it as a team effort, right? You know, if you're married or have a partner, you guys parent together and you work together for the betterment of your kids. And so a lot of people kind of get hung up on, well, how about myself? Well, I don't want to, you know, do what God does. So it's a very intimidating step to work through.
Yep, absolutely. But the other part is, you know, some of us might say, well, I'm going to turn this, whatever this is, to that higher power. And then when higher power is taken care of it, I'm going to take everything back and go back to normal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that ain't the way it works.
Right.
And you also don't make that, well, maybe 20 minutes after you did step two, you were able to do step three.
That is correct, because, you know, your step two is you know, you come to believe in a higher power that can restore yourself to sanity. And so step three is actually implementing step two. You know, what are the hands-on? What are the actions that we need to take so that we can, you know, continue our path to sanity in that context, you know?
But it's real hard to turn something over to an entity that we don't know much about.
Right. It's hard, especially if you have no concept, you know, and so sometimes you gotta kind of take that step back. I know the AA always uses the term God, and a lot of times that turns people off.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And confuse that with religion, but religion and spirituality are two different things. And so I go back to the big book term of using the spiritual malady. What is it that's higher than ourselves that we need to, you know, learn to trust, you know, and you know, one of the things I help people understand is when they do step three is, how do we differentiate religiosity versus spirituality? And for me, this is the best example that I have learned is that you're in your own boat in all this water. You know, you have your own personal connection to a higher power, whatever that is. But then you see all these big ships floating around and you join those big ships. That's kind of like a community of people that have similar belief systems, and they can reach their spirituality that way. But you don't have to have religion to connect with your higher power.
That's an important point. What was it like for you to take that third step, to turn it over? Was it comfortable? Was it, you know, or did you struggle with it?
I struggled with it. I mean, I knew I had to do this. When I look back at doing step three all these years, is I had to come to realize, you know what, I can't do this alone. And one of the things that shifted my perspective, and I think we touched on this a little bit, is a lot of times I get overwhelmed and start future tripping. But if I notice, if I take it just one day at a time, right, then mm-hmm. I realize I can start taking some actions, then I can look back behind me this past week or this past month, that I can see, you know what, I'm actually making some progress on some change in my behaviors because I toned it down a little bit and trust, you know, whoever it was. I'm able to see and build on that trust mm-hmm. as I move forward, whatever that is. I had to, again, we talked about the ego and how that is very detrimental to recovery because our pride and ego is a huge blockade to help us. We got to keep that in check and recognize what that is and when it shows up so that we can say, you know what, this is my ego talking, so that you're willing to take a step back and observe what is happening around you. And sometimes, you know, it takes an act of faith to do something that you don't even know.
Yeah, exactly. But you see, the thing is, it can feel sometimes to people like giving up.
Yes.
And that's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, it can feel like you're giving up. It can feel a lot of different things. And you know, it's just like, again, or it feels defeating because, hey, I want to do this. You know, we're individualism, you know. We like to do things alone, and that's like, wow. But then I think sometimes, you know, there takes a smidgen of humility to take back and the willingness to be teachable. Because if we're not willing to be teachable, then it can be a very daunting and overwhelming task.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way that we know when we've succeeded?
I think, you know, for me, as I look back, like I stated, is, okay, let's stay the course and let's try this, you know. As time goes on, we can look at that and then we can see, you know, if things are going in a direction that we are supposed to. I've always told people that if you do the next right thing, everything's going to come into place for you. And I think the other key with, especially with step three, is we're used to wanting things now. That's the impulsivity of an addiction. We got to learn and trust that process and let it unfold as it is. And when it unfolds as it is, and you start to realize, oh, this is a much better opportunity than it was when I was trying to do this a month ago or something like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whatever that time frame is.
Do you think that turning it over, letting go kind of thing is harder for someone who has a disability like blindness, hearing, you know, in order to survive with one or both of those disabilities, we have to fight harder to hear better or to make do or to please other people? And the idea of stepping back and not putting that kind of effort in, it's got to be a little, well, to me, it feels a little unnerving. Am I making sense?
Yeah, it does. And you know, there's there's a lot of people with disabilities who you know, and this is any, this also is equally true with people who are non-disabled. They're right. able-bodied mm-hmm. too, is they get stuck in this concept that if there is a God, then he wouldn't make this happen, or he wouldn't let so-and-so die.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And it goes back to really taking a step back and examine if that's more of an ego question going on, or is it we need to really understand what a higher power is and what that happens. I mean, we live in a world where there's tragedy left and right, you know? And, you know, and I think the hardest piece with all this is learning to adapt to live on life's terms. And you know, there's only so much skills that somebody might have or not have, and trying to get them with those skills and take a step back, you know, things do happen. And I think a lot hard part is as well, I don't believe in a higher power. I never do. I'm very realistic. And then I always, you know, invite them to read chapter 4 in the big book, which talks about agnostics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, take a step back. Okay, if you don't believe in God, that's okay. But what can you do believe in? You know, for me, you know, my spirituality, you know, I grew up a religious person and I still get my spirituality there, but I also have expanded my horizon and I get spirituality by being in nature. And,
yep.
You know, we see examples of that in many literatures where people have these aha or enlightenments when they're connected in nature in some way. And so I come through a mindfulness to help them connect to their energy of our soul and try to connect to Mother Earth and then come through and try to connect that way. And it's amazing what some things happen when people just take a moment and be mindful of the moment, because we live such in a fast-paced visual and auditory world. And so, you know, we get distracted a lot. And I think if, as we understand where those distractions are, then we can kind of separate those distractions and really connect to our true self.
And that's the hard part, connecting to our true self. And you're saying that by being in nature, that becomes a little easier. And I think you're right on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that way. And then sometimes, you know, people come in my office. I have two distinct opposite figures in my office. One of them is Buddha, and the other one is Darth Vader.
Okay.
And I compare and contrast those two things. Both of them are connected to nature in one way. One's using it for good, and the other one's kind of use it for personal destruction and personal gain.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Power. And learning to hone into our true self and what can help us get to where we need.
That's interesting because, you know, when we're in a process of being so confused in, as we can be in early recovery, mm-hmm. it's hard to know what is good for us. We have to, that's where the trust in the higher power comes in, because our judgment may be mm-hmm. severely impaired.
Right, right. And that's kind of the thing. It says, you know, I challenge people that are working step 3. It says, your best thinking got you here into treatment. You know, and I challenge that notion that I know what's right for me. I know where I'm in. But I challenge that, no, you don't, because you're here. And that kind of takes people to take a step back and kind of reconsider that, oh yeah, you know, that I made choices that weren't conducive and then and come in and start utilizing something greater than themselves. And then once they start practicing that application, then they start seeing those, the wheels are turning and recognize this does work.
And I think for me personally, there are times when, you know, I feel like, oh, why did that happen? And what I needed, where did that come from? And that's when I have to revert to, oh, the higher power is in, very much in play, and I need to let it happen and not to try to wrestle it and change it and, you know, whatever. But that's real hard to do.
I agree with that, because some people try to find some sort of explanation and they try to find some sort of justification in their own behavior to give them permission to go back into old behaviors rather than just accepting it as it is and see what happens, you know?
Well, that's the tricky part, to just let it happen, because we're so used as a society and... I think men probably more than women, but that's becoming less and less distinctive, of making things happen, because that's where, you know, we're what we're told to do.
And right. And it's also a social construct where this is what we need. If we're going to do it, we're going to go do it and get these things done.
Right.
And, you know, and again, you know, if we do things together, you know, I look at, you know, somebody who's a CEO, they're going to create this big thing for the company, but it's not this CEO that's making the company doing it. It's all the employees underneath it. And so in recovery, it's comparing our higher power as a CEO, and we take on these multiple roles as employees of that company. And that's what, you know, what we need to take a step back and look at.
Right.
Because we can say, you know, because we have direct connection to our higher power and communicate, just like employees can have a direct connection to the CEO. And, you know, so we still have our peace and our action. And I think I use the analogy of a platoon. You know, you all have the same goal and objective to get through things, but, you know, once you start going AWOL and operating outside of those parameters, then, you know, the platoon can't protect you in enemy territory.
Well, you mentioned being mindful and just waiting to see. Is that the position we need to take all the time in step three? Or is there more that we need to do? Something active, because one of the things that I, you know, I think about the blindness community, there's such a high unemployment that there isn't a whole lot of feeling like they had, like we have the power to make anything happen, because nobody wants to hire us, or, you know, in, you know, what is it, 28% of people with blindness, you know, have jobs. And that's pretty bad.
It is high, and you know, and I think, you know, we use resources so we can do these things. You know, sometimes we just don't know what those resources are.
That's
and,
the thing.
And, you know, even for me, you know, I'm blind, but I'm also deaf, and I was frustrated with this, but I never gave up hope. I think the key with step three is hope.
There you go.
It's okay to fall down, but it's the key of hope that we get ourselves up, dust ourselves up, and try again and find out where those resources are or higher power or whatever so that we can do it. Sometimes, you know, with the blind, we just don't have the right resources.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's the key, you know, and I tried, you know, learning Braille, learning all this other stuff, but it wasn't until I got cochlear implants mm-hmm. that it really changed things around. And then that's when I started taking off, because I had hope that I knew one day I was going to be working like I am. I did not anticipate myself working in a substance use residential treatment center like I am, yet alone focusing on the 12 steps.
Right.
And you know, part of me that got this was because of parents who reached out to me on message boards and other things, and trying to help the parents understand, you know, what do I do? My child has this. What do you recommend? And that's when I realized that's when social work, you know, was born in my heart. And then I took whatever steps needed so that I can keep moving forward and recognize. But that was a long process to be patient to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
the key, is to be patient.
And to keep, I think the word hope is the real important word, because that's what keeps us hanging in there.
Right, right, exactly.
And how do we instill that into clients, that hope? I mean, it's almost like...
It kind of goes back into faith. Try something. See what happens. If it doesn't work out, that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, we know having hope, you know, faith, hope, and action are all kind of intertwined a little bit. Because I see faith as something we believe in that we don't see. Hope is what helps us keep going and keep things in perspective. And action is all the things that we do to take the steps to try to make this happen. And we can't do it alone. So we tap into our resources, those people that can support us, those people that, you know, whether it's recovery, whether it's facing with a disability, is we rally around a community that can help us.
Yeah.
Because the key, you know, people use substances. It's a symptom of something else.
Right.
And so we got to dig in and figure out what that something else is.
And that's one of the things that getting together with AA or any kind of 12-step group is, because we're hearing other people succeed.
Exactly.
And that can kind of reinforces the possibility maybe we'll be one of those. But it still takes a certain amount of faith. But, it's really, I think the word, I'm latching on to your use of the word hope, because it really, I know it's been crucial for me, and I think it's crucial for all of us to have that hope, or why bother?
Right. And I think there's something else that would be helpful is to, you know, the 12 steps are basically principles that have been tested over time. And you can do the 12 steps for any kind of problem you deal with.
Right.
It's not specific to, you know, AA has no ownership of the 12 steps. It just came out of it. But you can, you know, you can apply the 12 steps in many areas of challenges that we struggle with in our lives. Because I think all of the 12 steps ask us to take a step and look at what really is going on. Because a lot of times we like to create, biases and narratives and assumptions to make our own personal narrative feel better, or to give us a pat on the back, when maybe that's not really what it is.
And then, you know, in this third step, when we've turned it over, it's awaiting, in a sense, hoping, in a sense, but what you're also saying, looking for the resources and mm-hmm. looking for who do I need to help me move forward?
Right. And you know, it, everybody's different. So everybody has different needs, which is why, you know, recovery is very, very individualized. You know, I can, you know, can find somebody who needs to go to AA every day, or they may need to go twice a day. Whereas, you know, you might have some people that only need 3 meetings a week or 2 meetings a week. You know, everybody's needs are different. And so being honest about where you're at and willingness to reach out to those resources to help you move along, you know. When people leave Circ Lodge, they're highly recommended to do 90 meetings in 90 days. Then after that, jump down to 3 or 4 a week, just depending where we are, because we got to get into some habits.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it takes time to create new habits. And that's where the patience is, especially with step three, when we work with these, you know, turning our over to a higher power, turning our will over, is because it takes time to develop new habits in our lives. It just doesn't come overnight.
And it takes time to trust.
Yeah, I always tell everybody, I'd be the world's richest man if I can give you a pill or wave a wand and take this all away right now.
But it takes patience. How long do people stay in your facility usually?
We have, you know, people come 30, 60, 90 days. We do come for 90 days. That's the gold standard, just because it takes time for your brain to reset, to create new patterns of behavior and things like this. And we also have, you know, if we have a resident that comes in, they completed the program, then they go out, but they relapse and stuff, then they need to do it all over again. They come back in, and we have what we call a relapse track, which is kind of a heightened sense. We do what we call a relapse autopsy, which is a very intense steps 1, 2, and 3. So we can really get to the root of what happened and what we need to do to shift things so we can keep going. You know, so, you know, the basis, you know, to successfully complete our minimum requirements at Circ Lodge is to complete steps 1, 2, and 3. Those are huge. Those are, you know, recognize your unmanageability, recognize, you know, we have a higher power that can restore us to sanity, and then turning our will and over to God as we understand Him. Those are the foundational steps of the 12 steps, because steps 4, 5, and 6 build up on each other from those first 3 steps, and then 8, 9, 10, 11 kind of help you how to live life moving forward. You know, we got list all the people we wronged. Step 9, making amends. Step 10, doing our daily inventories. And then step 12, you jump into 12. Sorry, I'm jumping up to 12. You know, carry the message and give service back to the community. You know, all these steps build upon each other.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the amazing thing about the 12 steps is the way that it's not major steps between one step and the next one. Though when you look back, it's pretty major. But it gives people a chance to get adjusted step by step and move forward.
Exactly. And you know, that's why I like working through steps 1 through 4. Step 4 is my favorite. And so step 3, you know, like I said, a lot of people say, well, I don't have a higher power. How does that do? What is it that you had as a child, if you did? What happened that you did this? And a lot of times they find out in step 4 some of the things they did that disconnected them from their higher power.
Mm-hmm. So part of step three is, one, getting a sense of the higher power, what that is for them, and to relate to it, and possibly in step four, to further refine it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the beautiful thing of you know, steps three and four working like you just described it. And then, you know, step three again, you know, what is it? And, you know, try it. I mean, I remember working with a guy in treatment years ago. He's an atheist. And his sponsor asked him to pray. And he's like, well, what am I praying? Thin air? But he was humble enough to try it. And for whatever reason, it did something for him. And then he really connected and identified with the agnostics chapter and eventually formed a AA meeting directed towards agnostics and atheists. And it was a very powerful thing.
It would be, because I know I've worked a lot with LGBT people who've been basically, many of them been abused by their church or rejected by their church.
And yeah, they've been marginalized. And I have another client that is AA, and is actually, there's a couple of AA meetings around here where I'm at that is geared towards the LGBTQ plus community to help them work through that. Because you're right, there is some marginalization from some of these religious people. And so sometimes I have to work through religious trauma, unpack that, and then rebuild it up to what their personal belief is.
Well, you said that you came from a religious background. So did that make it easier for you in terms of this step?
I think it is, because I can take a step back and, you know, I'm, you know, being a social worker, part of my true values and my professional values is to respect all different religions. And I have encompassed myself to embrace a lot of this stuff. I gravitate towards Native Americanism. And so when I work with Native Americans, when I come from the spiritual context, I will use their language and their words. Same thing if I'm working with somebody who's a Muslim, and you use their words and their language. And so I've taken a step back to learn and understand what those are. And, you know, I'm not saying anyone is more right or wrong or older than the other. It's just, it is what it is, because I can't put my own personal beliefs in that. I have to take a step back, but it allows me to, you know, examine my own personal belief systems, because I believe there's a lot of truth in a lot of things. I've had, you know, spiritual experiences outside of my own religion. Like, such as with Native Americans, a sweat lodge, for example, or a pipe ceremony with Native Americans. That's huge. And that's just opened my eyes, that also aligned in my own personal belief of my higher power, my God. He speaks to each of us individually, and we're all children of a higher power or God. So what am I to say? Because what works for me is working great for me, and what's working for you is working great for you. And who am I to judge that?
And that's an important plus to know, that no matter what what personal belief I have, I can work within that to achieve the sobriety or whatever resolution of that thing that's keeping me bound. And not to worry too much about the the word God or even higher power, but to find what is working for for me. And that's the beauty, I think, of the 12-step program, that it does leave it open.
And that's why I always emphasize people, don't get hung up on the semantics of step three is when they use the word God, because that's just a concept that, you know, most Americans understand. They know what God is. And so it's kind of this universal terminology, I believe. And we can swap that out for whatever that is. And so I challenge people, replace God with whatever your higher power is. When you read step three, scratch that out and put whatever word you want in there, then it's going to make a lot of sense to you.
You're very wise.
Well, thank you. I try to take a step back and look at it how I can apply that to whoever I'm working with, because, you know, not everybody comes from the same background, and everybody has, you know, we deal with, you know, people with different belief systems. And so we got to work to see what we can do to support their belief systems and make this work, or help them understand how they can apply this in their own personal belief system.
So I think this is a good place for us to close. But I wonder, as usual, I want to ask you what final thoughts you want to share with our audience.
I think with step three, it can be intimidating. Don't be afraid. Use your voice. If you're struggling with a concept, reach out. There's many people out here that can help you, whether it's a friend, whether it's a family member, whether it's AA, whoever that higher power is, we're here, to help you with that. And like I said, don't get intimidated by the word God, but define what your higher power is. And what works for you is totally okay, Who's the judge that your higher power is, if it's the doorknob, then okay, then it's the doorknob. But who's to judge that, It's whatever you make it for, and then find those resources that are help you and trust the process. I think that's the key, is to be patient and just continue to trust the process. That's where hope and faith kind of come into place, and allow grace to come in and give yourself the process for this to happen, and not judge yourself. I mean, that shame can be really loud as we try to turn our will over to God as we understand Him. And, it's okay to fall down, but, get yourself back up and keep on moving.
Mm-hmm. So what I heard you say was hope, patience, and you didn't use the word openness, but you certainly said it in different ways. Openness to whatever is really right. Part of the key of step three.
I would agree. Openness. Let's be open to something different.
Because,
our best thinking got us here. Let's be open to something different that might work for us.
Right. And take a chance. Take a chance.
Yeah, exactly.
Next week, we'll be talking with Darren about the fourth step, which is often the scariest thing for some people to do, because it calls for us to take an inventory. And we hope that people will tune in and understand what we mean by the inventory, and hear Darren help us to figure out what's going to work for us in continuing recovery. When we talk about the 12 steps, we're not just talking about people who are affected by addiction personally, but also the family members Al-Anon for family and friends of people who are addicted uses the same 12 steps, and it find it very a powerful tool to use. So just because you're a family member doesn't mean you ought not to be paying attention to the 12 steps. I want to remind everybody, if you have some questions some suggestions for Blindsight, don't forget we have a feedback line at 720-712-8856, or you can email us at aftersight.org, feedback at aftersight.org. Darren, thanks a million. We appreciate having you on board and look forward to our next session, which will be on step 4. And to all of you, tune in. Thank you for being here.